You're listening to The Andy Finn Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS Radio Network.
The Andy Finn Show is back, and I'm here with Conchetta Stewart, Dean of the College of Communication at Temple University. So, Conchetta, how's the basketball team look this year?
Oh, we have a great basketball team. Always looks good.
You're not just saying that?
No, I'm not just saying that. We're always players. We're always in it pretty close to the end, if not to the very end.
No, that's right. No, Temple does have a good team. Normally, we won't talk football.
Oh, man, you can really be hard on a girl.
Well, hey, I've taught at Rutgers. Terrible football team until just recently, and it's not great. University of Kentucky, terrible football team. So I'm used to this. Anyway, we're talking leadership primarily, and we're not going to get into football analogies. We're going to move on to teams, but not football teams. So Maria Elena Lagomasino is the former chair and CEO of J.P. Morgan Private Bank. And what she suggested as one of the lessons in life for leaders is that the best teams are created when you celebrate what people do and you bring together a group of people with complementary talents. What does that spark in you?
Well, I think we have two separate thoughts there. The celebrating part and the complementarity.
That's true. That's true.
But the celebration is so important. And, you know, I had to learn that over time. I found that I would be eager to move on. We've accomplished something. Let's move on to the next task. And not always appreciate the fact that people want to be complimented for what they've done. They want to know that they've done well. They want to know that you appreciate it. I mean, this sounds basic. But so I've had some good people work for me who said, Conchetta, maybe we ought to have a little celebration for the staff or a party or maybe let's get some shirts or things that I've always, frankly, not put a lot of personal value on because they don't motivate me. But
yes.
What a difference it's made in the organization. And I've had other people, other deans, other officers come to my building and say, how warm it is here, how open your team feels. And it's obvious to people that there's a sense of appreciation all the way around for each other. And so I feel embarrassed that it took me so long to learn that in my time as a leader, but it's really been a wonderful thing to be able to do that.
Well, let me put this to you. It strikes me that there's two aspects to this. And when I was working for AT&T, they were very good at these awards or milestones. And so I got these plastic plaques in plastic frames. And one meeting, I got three of them. I had a drawer full of them. And at some point, the level of this was, I mean, it struck me as overkill, meaning they didn't seem to be acknowledging me for the day-to-day things I was doing. But there'd be these milestones that I didn't think much of that they decided to mark, which is okay. But I guess what I'm getting at is you. One of the things I think about you as a leader is that you value your people. And I know that because I've been in an organization with you. But it strikes me that there's these formal milestones when something gets completed. And then there's the notion of simply acknowledging people for who they are. And you can do that any day, any morning you walk in the office with just a word to somebody. And you can stop them and say, hey, Judy, I haven't said this lately, but I just need to tell you how great I think you are, how much I appreciate what you do for me, however it is. And you strike me as the type of leader who drops those kinds of acknowledgments on people routinely.
Oh, and they are so delightful to do. When people realize that you're paying attention to what they've done, or what I really like to do is when I bring a visitor into the building, I'll stop someone and say, I'd like you to meet so-and-so in my shop here. He does X, Y, and Z. And recently, I'm so proud of a particular thing the person did. And I do that truly from the bottom of my heart. And I know it means so much to that person that not only am I aware of what they've done, I'm telling you know, people outside the organization about it. And they really, you could tell them, swell with pride.
And so what I'm saying, I guess, is that I work in an organization at one point where they gave out these plaques, but the morale was low. And when you tell me that when other deans come to your college and get a warm feeling, I suspect that the T-shirt and the milestones after particular deliverables is not at the root of it. It's helpful. But a big part of it is the day-to-day atmosphere, the ongoing acknowledgement that people know they're valued even before they get to the milestone.
You're right. It's all related. But I do think you need to take time to celebrate. And I was not very good at that. And you know where I've gone back to the analogy of when I was a kid and I was in the high school plays. I was never in the plays, mind you. I always worked behind the stage. But the cast parties, they were just the best times because we all got to celebrate together something we worked so very hard on. And that's what I think about when we have these occasional celebrations. I think of them as our cast parties.
Well, and I'll give you another example, and it's something as simple as birthdays. I used to be someone who eschewed birthday celebrations. My birthday could come and go, and I didn't even tell my friends that it was my birthday. I thought that was a form of humility. And what I learned as I got older was that by telling people it was my birthday, I was giving of myself. I thought it was a kind of bragging or something when I was younger. No, it's giving of myself because people want to acknowledge you. People want to celebrate with you. And so when I finally got to the point where I told my class, hey, when we have class next Thursday, it's my birthday. I knew that they would do something, but it was giving them a chance to interact with me. It wasn't, oh, I'm so important. It was a way to be in touch with them. And so one of the things I've learned as I've gotten older is that these celebrations, and this is a little different kind of celebration, but that they are important. But that don't not to feel self-conscious about them just because it's about me. It's okay to let people acknowledge me. That there's a selfishness when I don't allow that, when I pretend that, oh, this isn't important.
And, you know, I've learned that in other ways, too. At public events, I've learned I'm expected to make remarks. People want me to acknowledge a particular milestone or someone's accomplishment. So, and I used to think that I really shouldn't monopolize these situations. Yes, the boss is here, but it's not her show. But then I realized people want me.
And I'm guessing you also have had to learn to bask in the glory of that. That is, people will applaud. And there was a time when you said, well, I should probably not seek the spotlight.
Yes. Yes,
but it's not. But I think what you're saying is the same thing I was saying about birthdays. Is that it's that doesn't mean that it's about you. You're a vehicle for other people to express themselves.
Right, and that gets back to what I was trying to say before about almost a kind of larger than life quality that one must have as a leader, while at the same time being very approachable. And
right.
It's not inconsistent, actually.
No, I agree with you. And plus, I also think that you do a great job of that because you're decisive, you're very clear about what you want and what you expect, you hold people to standards, and you foster an atmosphere where people definitely feel they could speak up if they felt something was wrong or they didn't like something or whatever. Doesn't mean you'll necessarily take their advice because you know things they don't know, but that's there's a comfort level there, I think, with people that you have to cultivate.
Well, I just think in the end, it for me, it has always boiled down to I like to be successful, and I like to have people join me in that process. And nothing like building a team that appreciates one another and shares your goals for doing that. It's not a solo journey.
No, you're right about that, Conchetta. Let's take a short break, and we will be back after this.
Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to The Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
The Andy Finn Show is back, and I'm talking about leadership tonight with Conchetta Stewart. Conchetta has been a successful leader in both the corporate environment, and these days she's a dean at Temple University in Philadelphia. And we're discussing some comments made by women leaders in a recent Newsweek feature article about women in leadership. And Conchetta, our next comments come from Sharon Allen. She is chairman of the board of Deloitte & Touche, a well-known consulting firm. And what she said was, well, she actually gave two pieces of advice. Let me just tackle one of them. Take responsibility for your own career. Don't assume that others are aware of the good work you're doing. And this is my expression, tooting your own horn is not bragging. And I think this is particularly directed at, if not women, people who tend to be soft-spoken.
Well, I think that might not be, I think it is more a quality of women, yes. I don't think it has to do with soft-spokenness as much as the cliche, you know, the myth of meritocracy, that many women and men alike believe that if I just do a good job, it'll be recognized. I learned very early on in my career that you had to be sure that the right people knew you were doing a good job if you wanted a chance to try other things.
I think I might remember that, boss.
Yeah. So I think the point here is that you don't want to be bragging all the time, but if this is all the part about being confident. You have to know what you can do well, what you'd like to try next. And that's the other thing. If people don't know what you're trying to achieve in your career, what you want to do next, they're not going to make the opportunity available to you. They're going to figure you're very happy where you are, and you really need to be clear about, I'd like to try other things.
Yes. Yeah, that's right, because different people have different goals. And many people, they're not interested in moving up the ladder. They are interested in carving out a career at a level they are comfortable at. And if that's their style and their personality, you know, it doesn't pay to push them. But there's other people who want more, but they won't be given a chance if they don't speak up or they don't let it be known.
Exactly.
I agree with you.
And lots of times, too, you'll be involved in a particular job that the inner workings of it or what it took to get it done might not be obvious to folks. And sometimes you have to explain that in a way where you don't appear to be complaining, but just to let people know what it took to get the job done. And so I think it requires some amount of diplomacy, because otherwise you will appear to be a braggart.
Yes, that makes sense. Well, that general advice strikes me. It can work for anyone, even a new college graduate, this idea of taking responsibility for your own career. But the second piece of advice, excuse me, that Sharon Allen gave was develop your own style. And this is my paraphrase, you can be generous, courteous, and helpful to others and still be firm. You can be clear about expectations without being overtly aggressive. Now, I take that as advice to a boss, someone who has people under them that wants to know, how do I manage those relationships?
Well, I think there's a lot you just said in those last few comments. And it's interesting. We're coming back. We keep returning to the notion of image. You talked about developing your own style, for example. You know, leadership is about style. It is about how you dress, how you address people, how you carry yourself, the way you express yourself, what you wear. I mean, all of these things really are important, and you have to be calculating about it. And I don't mean to say that it's superficial. It all has to be that you are exuding a certain amount of confidence, a sense about who you are, you know who you are, and you know where you want to go. And style matters a lot. And I will tell you, as a young woman, I did not realize that. It took me a lot of years to come around and realize how important that is to people. I know where I am now.
And you're expected to dress a certain way. That is, you're going to buy suits that have a certain style. They're not going to be cheap, right? That you have to spend a certain amount on clothes when you reach a certain level of responsibility. Am I right about that?
Yeah, and what's interesting is because in the academy, people tend to think of us as a more casual kind of environment. But if you look at it, we're still an organization with external publics, with an image to uphold. And so certainly as a dean, I'm going to dress differently than I do
thinking as a man, anybody who's a department chair or above, they're wearing a suit or certainly a sports coat and a tie every day. You know, faculty members, we can we could dress however we wanted if we're just an assistant or an associate or a full professor. But as soon as you are in an administrative or a leadership position, you put on the tie.
But, you know, that is a little bit different. Image and style are kind of different. Style implies, and I sort of embrace this, a certain individuality. You're going to make your own mark in your own way. And I think that's important as well, because leaders can't appear to be and shouldn't appear to be part of a machine. They have to stand out in some way. And so we find our own.
Well, how would you say that you stand out?
Well, you know, I really take care in, all of the accoutrements of, you know, the shoes, the suits, the hair, the makeup. And these are all things that as a young woman I eschewed. I really felt it was superficial, and also as a feminist, I felt it was.
Well, and there's a level at which it is, meaning if that's all you have to offer,
right?
Which exactly. It is for some women, that's their main. As a young woman, that may be the main thing they focus on.
Well, I would say it's that way for some men too.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to pick on women, except when I think of makeup. Most of my friends, I hope, are not wearing makeup.
You never know.
No, you don't.
But there were a couple other points he brought up, also from that those lessons that were being shared with us about being generous and courteous and helpful. Those are all important qualities, and you learn that as a teacher. You still give the grades, and you still were clear about what the rules were, but that didn't mean that you didn't have a certain humanity in how you approached the issues. I'll never forget a time. It was very hard for me. My first year as dean, I had to recommend someone not be tenured, and it was the first time in a long time for the school, and it was difficult, but I took it head on. I spoke to the person directly and said, I want you to know I wish you well, and I am comfortable in supporting you in these particular areas that I knew the person had strengths. But I was clear about why I had to make the decision I did. And it was an uncomfortable meeting. And at the end, the person stood up, turned red in the face, and I thought, well, it's just going to come out right now. Walked over, shook my hand, and said, that's the classiest discussion I have ever had in my life. And it really made me feel very good that to this day, we still communicate. They recommend their students to us at the doctoral level, and it's really been wonderful. And I take that as I was generous and courteous to this individual and did not feel I had to be mean-spirited in how I broke bad news to them.
Well, and I also think all of that, generosity, courteousness, helpfulness, comes back to making a connection with people. You know, so many times in life, we kind of sleepwalk through life. Whether it's because we're just dealing with this person for 2 minutes in the checkout line at the grocery store, at the gas station, or it's somebody we don't know that well at the office, you know, we just say, would you do this? But when you make an authentic connection with people, it's a different conversation.
And they know that you're not writing them off as human beings.
That's exactly right. That's right. Well, look, when we come back, we are going to move on to the next piece of advice about leadership and really about how to relate to people.